I mean, I put up so many things to prove, you know, the two witnesses and, you know, the preterist view. And I didn't get any feedback from anybody. And then I find out the ones, you know, and I don't know. But, I mean, I can start. I haven't planned. I mean, I've thought of a number of things I can do, but.
Well, let's start there. Let's start with the two witnesses. And you tell me, first of all, I'll tell you what I think the two witnesses were. I think it's Enoch. And who's the other one?
Elijah.
Elijah, right.
Well, do you remember why?
You're going to have to tell me.
Well, the very page before you come to the book of Matthew is the last of the 39 books of the Law and the Prophets, right? Malachi.
Yes.
And Malachi says, I'm turning it to it right now, Haggai, Matthew, here we go. In the last two verses, chapter 4, there's only four chapters in Malachi, and there's so much in Malachi just in four chapters, but it says, verse 5, Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord.
Okay, that's wonderful.
And he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children to their fathers.
Uh-huh.
They come and smite the earth with a curse. So, then you have to compare. There's only two men in history who God took. They never died.
Uh-huh.
It's Enoch and Elijah. So although he doesn't name Enoch by name, you have to use your God-given reason.
Right.
There must be a reason why God did not allow these two men to die and go to be, you know. In Enoch's case, it would have been eventually Abraham's bosom, because Abraham hadn't been born yet. But it can't be Moses. He already died. And then you go by the law. And in Hebrews 9:27, a man's appointed once to die, and after this, the judgment. So he's not going to have men die twice.
Mm-hmm.
Only exception in this teaching is when Christ did resurrections, but that's to demonstrate his power. They weren't intended to die at that time. They just died, and Christ, like Lazarus, he resurrected him to the body, back, you know, to mortality. But eventually die. So, I mean, you have to put these scriptures together to rightly divide it. See, and they never do. They just want to say, well, it must be Elijah and Moses. Moses will be one of the two witnesses. No. Or you can go into wacko Eli James territory and say the two witnesses are the Old and the New Testament, or the New Jerusalem and Old Jerusalem. You know, they just, whatever they want to say.
Right, but it's clearly Elijah, because Malachi tells us it's Elijah.
Yes.
And they
want to be silly enough and believe that the birth of Christ was the great and dreadful day of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing dreadful about it.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's how silly this gets. And, you know, it's even worse because, I don't know, Cornoni got me to look at creation. Eurofolk radio, have you listened to any of it?
No, I've never even heard of it.
Yeah, it's eurofolkradio.com, and they've got Andrew Carrington, Hitchcock, and Eli James does a bunch of shows, and this new guy who sounds like a New York Canaanite, too, another one.
Yeah.
All we have is these infiltrators. They're just making a mess. Here, I've got it up. Let me click it on here. Hold on a second.
And, of course, now, for those of us here, GMT plus 3 Moscow Time Zones, it's now getting quite dark. In fact, nightfall's already happened here, and we are heading well into the evening as we hit the 7 o'clock hour. So, again, wherever you're listening out there, we really wish you and yours best. You know, we had a kind of a sad story coming out of Jordan this past week. If you ever get to know myself and the girlfriend personally, you'll find we give a lot, you know, on the human life side of things. We give of our time. A lot that we give, what money we can. We're not rich.
Oh, well, they're
people,
not.
But we can.
Well, basically, you know, it's 95% white national political and that, and then Eli throws a lot of his biblical lies in, but I've only been listening to it for a couple days, just here and there. But I heard Eli say, well, the Bible says, the prophets say that 2/3 of the children of Israel are going to be killed. So now all of a sudden he's going future. It hasn't happened yet. And yet, every time in the past, everything's been fulfilled except the second coming of Christ.
Uh-huh.
And people don't catch this. I mean,
I know.
Incredible. I mean, the guy, but See, he's being funded. He's being promoted. And, you know who Erin Dakin is?
No, I do not.
Oh, well, never mind then. I don't know. She lives here in Indiana, and John Cornone calls up and reaches out to all these people. But, anyway, she has a couple co-hosts she does shows on different networks with, and I think she's on GCN still, but she's also on her website's Truth Traveler, but I reached out to her too. I called her up and told her about what Eli James teaches, but she doesn't know the Bible and she doesn't understand. So.
Right.
Anyway, but yeah, I played the first one at the bottom and I was really disappointed. I don't know what happened. The recording starts and then it starts over again in the middle, and I didn't like what I heard.
Okay, well, why don't you, let's do it over right now, and then...
It's very difficult to explain Christian identity to somebody who doesn't know anything about it. It really is, you know.
The biggest thing that people don't understand is that what was written earlier is still true. When you come to what's written later, you have to go back to what's earlier to find the truth. And there's no better example than the law. The only time the two-word phrase Old Testament is used is in 2 Corinthians 3, and it's referring to the writings of Moses. And the only reason that Paul is talking about Jews and Gentiles is because people could only understand those terms. He's the same apostle who said there is no Jew and Gentile, because there was no house of Israel and house of Judah. So they were one people. Then the 10-tribe northern kingdom was divorced. They were not a people. Then Christ died for both that house, the house of Israel and the house of Judah, and they were one people again. And there isn't a scholar material. The proof is only to the believers. They have to actually be dedicated to believers.
I mean, that's true. There's one website that has 80 commentaries. I didn't go to all of them, but none of them. When Paul directs us, like I said, over and over again, from Romans 9, 24 to 26, to not only to the Jew, but to the Gentile, as he say also in O.C. O.C. is Hosea.
Uh-huh.
And then he quotes from two verses. Verse 25 of Romans 9 is, I can turn to it here, but, in other words, what I'm saying is Paul, by the inspiration of God, is sending us back to Hosea to identify who the Jews and Gentiles are, and none of them go there. None of them go back and quote the right verses.
Right.
I'll give you an example here, turning back to Hosea, so I can keep my... Okay, so all you do is be honest with the Bible, and then find the reference. In fact, in my center column Bible here, They have it right. Verse 24. Even us, whom he hath called, not of the Jews only, but also of the Gentiles. Verse 25, as he saith also in Hosea. Hosea is the Greek transliteration of the name Hosea, the prophet.
Right.
Says, I will call them my people, which were not my people, and her beloved, which was not beloved. The center column directs us back to Hosea 2:23. So here's Hosea 2:23. And I will sow her unto me in the earth, and I will have mercy upon her that had not obtained mercy, and I will say to them which were not my people, thou art my people, and they shall say, thou art my God. And that's what he said. I will call them my people which were not my people, and her beloved which was not beloved.
And what he's talking about is the northern tribes.
That's right. And why?
Because they were divorced.
His people for about 7.5 centuries. I'm just going rough numbers.
Right.
And then God divorced them.
Right.
He took the name Israel off them. They were scattered among the nations. Mm-hmm. And they're rightly called Gentiles with a capital G, but they're still the seed of Jacob.
Right.
Seed of Abraham, seed of Jacob. And they don't understand the divorce.
No.
So that's why we have, chapters like chapter 9 of Hebrews, talking about the testator, And once the testator dies, the will, last will and testament goes into effect. And then we have Romans 7 talking about the divorced woman's not free to remarry until the husband dies. Terrible. And all the other verses like Jeremiah 3:8 that you talk about the divorce. So what I'm saying is that if they would go back and read, and I'll just read right now. Are you recording this?
I sure am.
Okay. Okay, now, the book of Hosea, and here's a little background first. So, the word of the Lord, verse 1 of Hosea 1. The word of the Lord that came unto Hosea, the son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. So, they give a time period, mentioned four kings. And it does the same thing in the book of Amos and the book of Isaiah. Mm-hmm. So those three were prophets, and they prophesied both over house of Judah and house of Israel. They're not just dedicated to one or the other of the two houses. But the beginning of the word of the Lord by Hosea, and the Lord said to Hosea, Go, take unto thee a wife of whoredoms and children of whoredoms, for the land hath committed great whoredom, departing from the Lord. Verse 3. So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, which conceived and bare him a son. All right. Then I remember, I don't know if you remember, it's been so long now, but we went through and saw, this is completely figurative language. I know, and I do take the Bible to be literally true, but God does use figurative language.
Yes.
We're going to find out and prove that it is in the next verse.
Yes, I know that.
All right. In fact, you can look up this word, it's D-I-B-L-A-I-M, Diblaim, and the definition given in the dictionary in Strong's is a figurative name of a woman. Probably should have said name of a figurative woman, but close enough. Anyway, so verse 4. And the Lord said unto him, Call his name Jezreel, which means God will sow. For yet a little while, I added that in. It's not in the text, but that's what it means. God will sow. Semicolon. For yet a little while, and I will avenge the blood of Jezreel upon the house of Jehu, and will cause to cease the kingdom of the house of Israel. Kingdom of the house of Israel. I'll guarantee you that Hosea did not beget the kingdom of the house of Israel. All the people of the kingdom, that is. Jacob did.
Okay.
We know this is figurative. It's just God's way of demonstrating the whoredoms of his people in Israel. How they constantly turned away from him. You know, that's basically the whole history. If you read the historical text, you know. And yeah, in Judah there were kings that were, some of them were pretty much good. But there were three, you know, there's King David, and there's Hezekiah, and there's Josiah. And those are the three kings that were exceptional. And when you read about their history and what they did, they walked in the laws of God all the days of their life and turned not from it. Anyway, so, verse 4, and then verse 5, And it shall come to pass at that day that I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. Verse 6, And she conceived again and bare a daughter. And God said unto him, Call her name Lo-Ruhamah. For I will no more have mercy upon the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away. So, you know, Ruhamah basically means mercy, and the lo before it is no mercy.
Yes.
That's what Lo-Ruhamah means.
Yes.
These are figurative children, not literal. Verse 7, But I will have mercy upon the house of Judah, and will save them by the Lord their God, and will not save them by bow, nor by sword, nor by battle, by horses, nor by horsemen. Verse 8, Now when she had weaned Lo-Ruhamah, she conceived and bare a son. Verse 9, Then said God, Call his name Lo-Ammi, for ye are not my people, and I will not be your God. All right, now, so Lo-Ammi means not a people, not my people. That's the divorce.
Right.
Now, going back to Romans 9 for a second, verse 26, And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, Ye are not my people, mm-hmm. there shall they be called the children of the living God. So here we come to verse 10. Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured nor numbered. And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, ye are not my people, there it shall be said unto them, ye are the sons of the living God. So back to Romans 9:26. And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, ye are not my people, there shall they be called the children of the living God. I mean, it's astounding.
It is astounding. It's an astounding.
You know, the Gentiles, who are none other than Israelites,
I know, but
who were descendants of the 10-tribe northern kingdom called the kingdom of the house of Israel in verse 4 of Hosea 1.
Well, you're right. Your proof is astounding. But what's even, you know, what's also astounding is that God was so harsh here, and that he kind of make this hard for you to understand. But you're going to understand that I hate your guts now.
Well, no, yeah, but you got to understand this thing about God. You know, they teach the love, 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 love side of it all the time.
That's right, but Keith. That's right.
Additional.
That's what you have to understand. God is not a touchy-feely God.
Well, you know, he has tender mercies too, but he's an everything God. But what he is not a God who without judgments.
That's right.
If we turn from him, see, it's conditional.
That's right.
We would be blessed in this land. We would have great wealth. We wouldn't be ruled over by the Esau, Edom, you know, seed of the serpent people.
That's right.
Because we've been delivered into the hands of our enemies because of our disobedience.
That's right.
And I'm just saying that this is really, because I listened to something the other day. There's a guy named Chris Hinckley on RBN, and people were calling in about Christian identity. And, the callers didn't know what they're talking about. One follows Eli James, and he's completely lost in the wolf in sheep's clothing, Eli, or whatever his real name is, Joseph P. November. There wasn't a good comment, and he gave the same false understanding of Romans to try to justify why he doesn't agree with Christian identity, and it was just a mess. And I thought about even calling in, but I gave up because you can't really do anything in a few minutes when you call into a, you know, this talk show call in just doesn't work.
And they're never going to let you talk.
Well, I don't know. Chris Hinckley seems to be better than most on that, but it's just too hard to do it in a few. You can't, you know.
Uh-huh.
I was going to maybe call in and then leave my number at the board and talk to him, because he's really getting himself into a deep hole because he has no understanding of the Bible.
Yeah.
And then I got more frustrated and stopped broadcasting because I just couldn't beg, I couldn't have bought anybody, you know, paid anybody to go back and do a Bible version study.
Right.
Look at this tragedy of these Bibles they flooded us with since 1881 with the English Revised Version. They have just dumped so many Bibles translated from corrupt manuscripts. They're not Bibles. They're not from accurate manuscripts.
That's right.
Primarily Sadducus, Codices Sadducus, and Vaticanus. I mean, it's not that hard to do, but nobody will do it. You go back and you say, oh, look at this. These two manuscripts are the basis for all new modern versions, save the New King James, but that's a different story in itself. That's one of the most corrupt versions of New King James. But all the other ones, and the two codices, disagree with each other in over 3,000 places.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's short, concise articles, and then there's whole websites, because in the late 1800s, Dean Burgon was standing up against this changing, you know, the King James Bible, because King James, remember the printing press, mid-1400s, the Gutenberg, you know?
Yes.
They had, on the initial printings, when it was released in 1611, there were a lot of, typo errors, typesetting errors. And they worked all those out, and there was some errors of omission, and they worked that out over, I think it was back 2 or 3 decades before they got it accurate with the manuscripts. But by around the mid-1600s, a little before 16, in the 1640s, you know, King James became the Bible of the English-speaking people.
Mm-hmm.
It replaced the Geneva Bible. Not that the text of the Geneva Bible was corrupt. It just, It just had all these margin notes, which were commentaries by Calvin and Calvin's followers.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the problem, because Calvin was in deep heresies on some very important things. So when they got rid of the commentaries, now we had a Bible, because when, you know, when we start out, when we're, especially when we just start beginning to study the Bible, we don't know a lot of what any of this means. So people naturally go to the column and let's see what the experts say.
Yes.
Calvin was an infiltrator.
Yes.
Teaching that there's no free will. You're born either to be damned or you're born to be saved. There's nothing you can do about it either way. All these heresies became accepted. Like they're imprinted in a lot of our minds in the background because it's so, it's just so prevalent in these Christian churches today. They don't even, a lot of them don't even really know they're affected by John Calvin's heresies. So,
uh-huh.
But, you know, you can do a whole study on choice, you know, and like Joshua saying, choose ye this day whom you will serve, and all, you know, so there's ways to just prove these heresies are wrong, and just that, heretical, but this part of Romans 9, and it's just astounding that the scholars don't go there, that these pastors that teach, they don't catch this. It would turn the world upside down if they understood the Gentiles were really the seed of Jacob. They're not all the other people of the world.
That's right.
And we went into the deeper things about that. Why? Oh, does God hate the other races that he created and called good? No. But they're not fallen.
Right.
To the depth of the fall of Adam.
Right.
So Hebrews 1 and 2 is, and in chapter 2, Christ partook of blood as the children did also. That's when Adam and Eve partook of blood because they fell.
Uh-huh.
They did that sin. If you eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, in that day thou shalt surely die. So, if the sin was if the death was conditional upon doing the sin, that means they could only have been immortal.
Uh-huh.
And God placed, he formed the body in Genesis 2:7. That's just the body. That's not the man. They were already created in Genesis 1:26 and 27.
Mm-hmm.
He formed a body to place man on earth. Just like it says in Job 20, verse 4. Know not this of old, since Adam was placed on earth. It says man. It's not a mistranslation, but when you look it up, that man is Adam. And in other places in the Bible, we have men who are Enosh. And the definition, when you look up, when you find the words, there's two in the Aramaic, and they're number 605 and 606 in Strong's. And, of course, that's in the Hebrew dictionary. And it's from 582. And that's Enosh. And it says, less than the more dignified 120. Number 120 is Adam. So they were mortal men from the beginning, but that's not the case with Adam.
Right.
That's why Adam was unique. And that's why we went to the genealogy in 3. Luke 3 gives a genealogy. Here, let me turn there real quick. And they never explain these things. They never consider them, even. I've talked to a lot of pastors. They don't want to hear about it. I mean, most of them, and I say, you know, Adam's called Son of God in Luke 3. Oh, show me that. Where's he called Son of God? Well, in Luke 3, and this gets into time periods too, but verse 22, and the Holy Ghost descended in a bodily shape like a dove upon him. And a voice came from heaven which said, thou art my beloved Son, in thee I am well pleased. And Jesus himself began to be about 30 years of age, being, parentheses, as was supposed, the son of Joseph, which was the son of Heli,
mm-hmm.
which was the son of Matthat, which was the son of Levi, and so forth. And it goes on from verse 24 there, starting this genealogy, all the way to verse 38, the end of the chapter. It's a genealogy. And I know for a certainty this is not Mary's genealogy. This is Joseph.
Yes, because you know that of your study.
Right. Christ's only biological connection to man is through Mary, the mother.
Right.
Holy Spirit's his father, not Joseph. And he came from the royal line of David, which is in Matthew 1. But anyway, to stay on point here, when you come back down to the bottom, verse 37, which was the son of Methuselah, which was the son of Enoch, which was the son of Jared, which was the son of Melechiel, which was the son of Canaan, which was the son of Enos, which was the son of Seth, which was the son of Adam, which was the son of God.
Right.
God has a family. He also has a creation that he called good. But he has a family.
Yes.
That's why he gave dominion to Adam, because he was the heir of all his creation.
Yes.
And even above all angel kind.
Yes.
And Satan attacked Eve and seduced her. And that's what Paul said, wholly seduced, beguiled. The word means wholly seduced.
That's right.
So, anyway, then then these pastors just look at you and go, And you don't know if they ever really consider it more or anything else, but I know that Jesus is the only begotten Son of God. That's true. He was born to a woman. Adam was not. He was created.
Right.
And that's why it just gets so annoying, because I'll have to tell you sometime about what I've been listening to and some of these so-called pastors, but remember we went back to over and over again, Genesis 1, 26 and 27, and God said, let us make man in our image, verse 26, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. Verse 27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And then you read chapter 2, and Adam's alone on the earth. Eve hadn't been formed yet.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's, after he told Adam, that there was no helpmeet for them there.
Right.
And then he put him to sleep and took a rib and formed a body for Eve. But they had already been in creation. And it's on a chronology of Genesis 1. It's called the sixth day. All right, so, like I was saying, too, caught me unawares. I didn't know we were going to just start recording. It just caught me cold here.
Yeah, but it's great.
Well, what's great is the Word of God. It's just we'd have to be taught it properly for once. They just put everything into all men are descended from Adam, case closed.
Right.
They say the earth is 6,000 years old, and then they can't account for why there's no mention of angels being created in Genesis 1. And it's wrong to add to the Bible. They can't just presume that God really, that they're created there. We know they're created, and we know that this is the creation story. So they must have been created. God just didn't write it. That's absurd. So remember, in their minds, man was created flesh and blood. And that's Enosh. That's not Adam. Adam was created flesh and bone only, no blood.
Right.
But let's see, where in Timothy? I don't know. Let's see here. I always have my same problem. Was that first or second? Let's see. Hold on a second. Give me just a second here. No, it has to be in first. What am I thinking of? Do I see first, five, three. That's right. 1 Timothy 2. It says, again, it's hard to know where to start. Well, read the whole chapter, anybody listening, when you get a time. But at the end here it says, verse 11 of chapter 2, let the woman learn in silence with all subjection. Verse 12, but I suffer not a woman to teach nor to usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence. Verse 13, for Adam was first formed, then Eve. It doesn't say created, it says formed.
That's right.
They were both created, soul and spirit, together. They were in heaven with God, and God placed Adam on earth by forming the body and breathing into his nostrils.
Yes.
Verse 14, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived was in the transgression. Notwithstanding, she shall be saved in childbearing, if they continue in faith and charity and holiness with sobriety. So there's conditions on that, too. We have to continue in it, and take it seriously. We have to be serious about this instead of listening to all this nonsense and lies and things that break the scriptures. When the truth is, if we want the truth, the scriptures can't be broken. This is one continuous story from beginning to end of the race of Adam and the family of Israel, God's chosen covenant people.
Right.
If you remember Deuteronomy 7:6, and, you know, you listen to any one of these pastors, and a lot of them, most of them will say, well, the genealogies, and that's what this Christians don't matter. He quotes from Timothy 2, the one where he says, you know, about don't go for endless, you know,
genealogies.
Strife over endless genealogies. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, but endless genealogies is simply because you're looking at, by the time that Paul was preaching to his appointed people, the Israelites of the house of Israel, the Gentiles, who were now free to remarry the husband, Jesus Christ, because he's the testator and the husband, and he died. So that's the wild olive branch. So he quotes from Romans 11, too, about being a wild olive branch broken off, and he doesn't even understand it. You can read, even in Hosea, the last chapter, Israel's the olive branch. In Jeremiah, Israel's the olive branch. Israel and only Israel are the olive tree. So if it was an olive branch broken off, well, there's your divorce.
Right, that's beautiful.
But it's still Israel.
Yeah.
So when they talk about, well, you see the different levels of complication to get back to immortal Adam, son of God, who's the heir and the dominion. And that's why when we went back to the flood story in Genesis 6 to 9, and in 9, when God made the covenant with Noah and the descendants of Noah, he did say, be fruitful and multiply, same commandments given to Adam and Eve, but he left off dominion. He didn't say have dominion, and the reason why is because we're now fallen and mortal. We have borne the image of the earthy, as Paul writes in Romans.
Mm-hmm.
1 Corinthians 15 and Romans 8, I'm convinced, are not understood by a single pastor in this country.
That's right.
Except some maybe in identity that, you know. And, I mean, that's another thing we could do, but I'm just going to play a little more of this to show you what hold on, let me take a break for a second because I need to get my thing of water out from the kitchen. But I'm going to play a little of this just.
Sure.
God preserved his word. Yes,
this is the first broadcast from 2013.
The one at the Bible. It's accurate. And the way I proved to myself was through biblical archaeology, through the Masoretic text, which Eli James says is terrible and no good and all distorted. Is actually the one that's confirmed by biblical archaeology. For instance, Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, he came to power in 745 B.C. But he didn't deport anybody from Israel until about 740 B.C. Which screws up his whole theory about how, oh, it was 745 B.C. and that takes us to 1776 and that's 2,520 years. This sort of proved that America is the New Jerusalem. America's always been a British colony. If I could get these people to go to the researchers who did the proof and showed what the Treaty of Paris of 1783 was, what the Masonic so-called republic, it was a commercial republic based on the earlier contract, the Virginia Land Company and the rest of it. Nothing is, you know, if they would go there and prove it, then they say, okay, well, we have no faith in the Constitution because it's all Masonic. It's all part of the Crown Temple. That would be the Jewish bankers, the exchequer.
Yeah, I don't want to take it down. It's just, I
had a running there. Oh, goody, goody, goody. You don't want to take it down. Thank you, Keith.
Well, I just don't want people to start there because there were a lot of problems as I went through this day before yesterday. I was listening to it, and that was a recording problem.
Yeah.
And it stopped and started over again, but it's not that. It's just some of the things that I said. I wasn't real happy with the results. So
now, Keith, is there something you want to say that would improve that message?
Well, what I thought about doing was maybe going through it and taking notes and then correcting the things and doing, calling you and doing that with it. I don't know. Are you able to take the one off that's there now? If If I redo it,
I'm able to, but I'm not willing to, because I want people to be able to hear your teaching from different points of view. In other words, unlike you, I don't think you can say it too many times.
Well, yeah, no, I'm not opposed to the repetition. I just wasn't real happy. You got to understand that, you know, when I start doing these things, I'm not write it out and then read it into the screen, you know, like many others do.
I know. That's what makes it great. It's very alive, and that's what I love about it.
Yeah, but when you're doing it, you know, and this is why, on my conscience the whole time I've been doing this, I'm the one who speaks against one-man ministries. In other words, I don't want to be the one that, you know, but I'd rather have a conference call with 10 men who've actually studied the Bible, and then somebody else can say something and add to or challenge it, saying, you know, that I don't quite agree with that, here's why. That's what I'd like to see, because that's how teaching is to be done in the church, according to 1 Corinthians 14.
That's a fine idea. We'll continue to strive for that. But in the meantime, I don't want to strip down your wonderful work, because I worked so hard to get it up there.
Didn't I? And, you know, now you and I, we've been through this a lot of times, but we had so many more conversations we didn't record than ones we did.
I know. I wish I'd recorded them all.
Well, but we were arguing because I believe that man lives by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God, and I've never persuaded you to adopt that.
That doesn't have anything to do with the value of your work.
I don't know if it has been any value. I didn't get any feedback.
You're never going to get feedback. That's not the way the internet works. What happens is people go to the internet to entertain themselves, and if they find a voice they like, they get addicted to it, and they listen to it over and over again, and the teacher never knows it.
Well, I don't know if they'll like my voice at all. I don't have that great of a speaking voice, and I'm talking through a speakerphone. I don't have Skype or anything that would give me any kind of, you know.
No, when I say your voice, I'm not talking about the tone of your voice, although that's great. I'm talking about what you have to say. That's what I'm struggling to get out into the public, because I think it's so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
So let's keep doing. Tell me what it is that you wanted to say that you didn't think you said right last time.
Well, Mona, like I said, I was listening to it, and a number of things came up, but it was a couple days ago, and they're not coming up in my mind right now.
Okay, fine. Then we're not going to worry about that right now. What is coming up in your mind right now?
Well, it's just this Chris Hinckley was responding through a wrongly, you know, interpreted passages, which he's, you know, taken totally out of context, claiming that he is in context, but that's this one that we keep going to, because I don't know anything more important than Romans 9:3-5.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not saying it's the most important thing, it's just one of so many that are just so clear.
And is that where Paul takes us back to Hebrews?
Well, this is where Paul says this, Romans 9:3. Now remember, I go through this care. This is all one sentence from verse 3 through verse 5. There are no periods. So I'll read it again with the punctuation. For I could wish that myself were accursed from Christ for my brethren, my kinsmen according to the flesh, verse 4, who are Israelites, to whom pertaineth the adoption and the glory and the covenant, and the giving of the law, and the service of God, and the promises, Whose are the fathers? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? You know? Okay, I shouldn't have interrupted. Whose are the whom Christ came? Who is over all, God bless forever. Amen.
Okay, so...
You just think, oh, holy God Almighty, how can you have a statement like that? The adoption, the glory, the covenant, the giving of the law, the service of God, and the promise. The covenant's plural. See, it starts with the covenant with Abraham.
Yes.
He's our first father of the faith. Abraham had six other children with his second wife, Keturah. He also had Ishmael, who was born before Isaac. But none of these but Isaac was the holy seed. It went through Isaac. That doesn't mean God hates his other children.
That's right.
Just had a covenant people, and then Then Isaac had two sons. There are only two births he has recorded of the twins, Esau and Jacob. So it was settled with Jacob. It was going to be only Jacob's seed. We're going to be God's covenant people forever. And the saved, the remnant who are saved, are destined to be heirs of the creation as Adam was in the beginning. That doesn't mean there won't be other people on the earth. They're just not going to inherit the kingdom as the saved of Israel are. And that's why, I mean, Romans 9 is just amazing.
Hold on, let's wait for this clock to go through. Yeah, well, it's all amazing, Keith, the way you report it. And you're right, nobody else even talks about these passages, isn't that right?
Yes, but it's just so hard to get over the big humps of learning the Bible and this what we're conditioned with, that, all people descend from Adam and Eve, period, case closed.
Which is...
You know, but that's not true. Yeah. Remember Deuteronomy 23, verse 2? And he talks about the bastard, and you look up bastard, and it says alienated, a mongrel.
Mm-hmm.
How do you have a mongrel if we're all one race?
Right.
Why can't our eyes even tell us when we see other people like the blacks, and you know, that we're not one race?
That's right.
But you've got all these people like Kent Hovind and Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis, and... Well, Kent Hovind with his Dr. Dino, he goes into dinosaurs quite a bit, and he does some good work against evolutionary theory. And I know you and I have argued about that, because I think you still believe in evolutionary theory.
Yeah, well, again, it doesn't matter what I believe. I'm just a technician getting your voice out, because when I heard you on RBN, I realized that your voice was wonderful and that it wasn't on the Internet. So, Yishin.
Appreciate your help, and I'm glad, because I was looking for someone else to do it with, but I couldn't find anybody over the years, but I just got so fed up with what I'm hearing, because back to Kent Hovind, his story is there were only 8 souls left. There were only 8 people on the earth, as if, you know, because he's part of the universal flood, which I'm not.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I recommended that article on... trying to think of the name of the church I started in. What I think, I don't know if they changed their name, but God's Covenant People. But he did. You can find it on the Internet, an article called "Some Answers to Answers in Genesis." They cannot explain how all these people that existed just a few hundred years after the flood, how they multiplied that fast from 8 souls. They can't explain that at all. It's key. But Kent Hovind's explanation is that, well, all right, we've got Noah and his wife. And we know they had 3 sons, right? Japheth, Ham, and Shem. So his theory is that, well, Ham must have had a black wife, and Japheth must have had an Oriental or Asian wife.
Yes, that's right. That's their explanation.
Yes. Well, you know, that's just absurd. Because, like Joseph, for instance, he married a Hamite in Egypt, and he married lawfully.
Uh-huh.
That's the whole... difference is that you don't understand this either, that when God made his covenant with Abraham, confirmed it unto Isaac, and confirmed it unto Jacob for a law, like the 105th Psalm says.
Yeah.
Now, I'll even read that one. I'll just pause just to read it too, because 105th Psalm. And this is a quote. It says... Verse 6 of Psalm 105, O ye seed of Abraham, his servant, ye children of Jacob, his chosen. He is the Lord our God, his judgments are in all the earth. He hath remembered his covenant forever, the word which he commanded to 1,000 generations, which covenant he made with Abraham and his oath unto Isaac, and confirmed the same unto Jacob for a law, and to Israel for an everlasting covenant, saying, unto thee will I give the land of Canaan, the lot of your inheritance, when they were but a few men in number, yea, very few, and strangers in it. And they went from one nation to another, from one kingdom to another people, they went from the land of Canaan down to Egypt, he suffered no man to do them wrong. Yea, he reproved kings for their sakes, saying, touch not mine anointed, no Hatim, period, ever. So there was a hedge around Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And all you have to do is read Genesis 12 to the end, 12 through 50. It is 100% the story of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and their seed. In chapter 36 of Genesis, dedicated to the genealogy of Esau. But that's the division, and that's why Paul's bringing it up again in Romans 9. Esau, who I hated, Jacob, who I loved. Why did he hate Esau? And that's why we went to Hebrews chapter 12, where Esau's called a fornicator.
Uh-huh.
Sought repentance with tears and found none.
Uh-huh.
Right. I don't know if you remember these things, because it's been a while.
I do. I mean, I kind of do. I don't have them memorized like you do. But, yeah, I love hearing it over and over again, because it's always a little bit different. And, yeah, you know, here's Esau, and he's a bastard, and he fornicated, and he married outside of his race and screwed up everything.
Well, that's right. It's in Genesis 26, the last two verses, 34 and 35, and Esau was 40 years old when he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri, the Hittite, and Bashemath, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite, which were a grief of mind unto Isaac and to Rebekah. A grief of mind.
Right.
And I was listening to Bruce McCarthy on a, remember him going into the story about how Isaac made, wait a minute, hold on a second. I'm trying to think. What did Bruce say? Well, I won't go there now because I don't remember exactly what he said. But he did a good job on one area in the Bible to show racial differences.
Yeah.
If you remember some of the latter broadcasts we did, we went into the story about slavery, you know, Leviticus 25, and why there were certain people that could be owned generation to generation. You left them in your will to your heirs.
Yes.
Permanent slaves.
Yes.
You see, some of these things can only be racial.
Yes.
We went into Ezra 9 and 10, and why the ones who had interracially married, of course the mainstream churches will call it interfaith marriages, but we showed where the commandment was to put away the wives and such as are born of them in Ezra 10.
That's right.
That was the remedy. They had to divorce the whole family because the children now were, you know, mongrels, mulattoes, bastards,
right.
Mamzers, whichever word you want to use, it means the same thing.
Right.
They were mixed race. But anyway, in Genesis 27, it says, well, there's, you know, this is, these are good, starting with those last two verses of 26 and reading all 27 and 28 is a good thing to do because it gets into the story, but I'll just skip and just sum this up, just a summary thing. In verse 46 of chapter 27 of Genesis, and Rebekah said to Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob take a wife of the daughters of Heth, such as these which are the daughters of the land, what good shall my life do me? Then we come to 28, and we'll skip down here. 28, verse 8. And Esau, seeing that the daughters of Canaan pleased not Isaac his father, then went Esau unto Ishmael, and took unto the wives which he had, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebajoth, to be his wife. So, Esau did make one lawful marriage.
Yes.
Interracial marriage is lawful with God. And,
I'm sorry, that didn't come through. Interracial marriage is not lawful to God, right?
No, that's right.
That's right.
You know, the commandment was, you know, what God has joined together, let no man put asunder, but God never joins a man and a woman of two different races in marriage.
Right.
Not lawful. And that's why we went into what a lot of people who just come into Christian identity, and when they read Deuteronomy 23, verse 1, 23 of Deuteronomy. He that is wounded in the stones or hath his privy member cut off shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord. Verse 2, a bastard shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord. Even to his tenth generation shall he not enter into the congregation of the Lord. Now they take that, you know, they'll take that and say, well, after 10 generations, then, no, this is a euphemism, this is a way of saying never, because he's going to explain it in the next verse, verse 3. An Ammonite or Moabite shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord, even to their 10th generation shall they not enter into the congregation of the Lord forever.
Yes, yes.
It's forever.
Yes, and anyway, I really appreciate that you clarified that with the next passage, but even without that, it's clear just from the writing that, as you say, it was euphemistic. It just meant...
It's a way of just saying forever.
It was just a way of saying forever, that's right.
Right, and the reason is, too, because when you do the genealogy studies, which I never got anyone to do along with the time period, Adam's genealogy, and that's where the fundamental premises, this is the book of the generations of Adam. The word generations is really race. It's toledah. If it were revolution of time, as in father to son to grandson, it would be, what's the word, door. But it's toledah, and it means race. And then God gives, you know, Adam to Seth, you know, on down to Noah. And in Genesis 5, the last births recorded are Noah's sons, 500 years before the flood. And it gives Shem first, even though Shem's not the firstborn. He puts, you know, Shem, Japheth, and Ham, I think's the order. I can check it real quick. There's a point. See, this is the problem I have all the time. I think of about 1,000 different things, different ways to go in what I'd like to say, but since this is a spontaneous recording and I don't have anything planned, but yeah, he says, and Noah was 500 years old, and Noah begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth.
Yes.
We actually gave them in reverse orders, but the point I'm making is, this is the only genealogy with the time period attached. Mm-hmm. It tells you when, how old the father was when he begat the son, and how many years he lived after he begat him, all the way down through. And that's what continues in Genesis 11. Mm-hmm. And when you look at it, you know, Noah really did live to see his great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great eight greats and grandsons born. Mm-hmm. 10 generations. Mm-hmm. Noah was still alive when Abraham was born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But nobody was living 10 generations anymore at the time of Abraham, when Abraham was born.
Right.
After, you know, Noah and the earlier ones died. But that's the point. See, in Genesis 11, this lifespan issue that amazes everybody, Genesis 11, verse 10. These are the generations of Shem. Shem was 100 years old and begat Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. And Shem lived after he begat Arphaxad 500 years and begat sons and daughters. So we know that Shem lived 98 years before the flood. He's not the firstborn. The Bible tells us that Japheth is the elder.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it's just kind of general. He's 500 years old, and he begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And it's actually Japheth who was born first. But anyway, then it says, and Arphaxad lived 530 years and begat Selah. So he's 35 years old, and he has a son, Selah. 13, and Arphaxad lived after he begat Selah 403 years and begat sons and daughters. And Selah lived 30 years and begat Eber. So there's your third from Shem, is Eber.
Yes.
That's where the name Hebrew comes from.
Yes.
Selah lived after he begat Eber 403 years and begat sons and daughters. And Eber lived 430 years and begat Peleg. And Eber lived after he begat Peleg 430 years and begat sons and daughters. So three generations after Shem, they're still living to be over 400 years old.
Yeah.
Right. So when they get into the earth was divided in the days of Peleg, and they think that's when, you know, the continent separated and all that, I think that's nonsense.
Uh-huh.
I think because, see how long Peleg's living here? Now, Peleg lived after he begat Reu 209 years, but see, there was this thing called the Tower of Babel.
Yes.
And they built it, and God didn't like that, and he scattered the people and confounded the languages. I think that's what the Bible means in the days of Peleg, because Peleg was still around.
Uh-huh.
So, that's just an aside. I don't even know why I threw that in this one, because... You caught me really off guard here, because I don't have anything planned specifically to talk about. I just wanted to highlight some of these key verses, like in Romans 9, 3-5. And, you know, I'm sorry, folks, but God said what he meant. He meant what he said. And, you know, what it comes down to is, that, you know, these Protestants and Catholics don't really believe the Bible at all.
They don't believe it. They don't understand it. And when you show it to them, it gets hit by the communist brainwashing, and they cannot accept it.
And they hate you just as you will be hated.
That is correct.
Hated. So it's not, that's not my problem. It's just that there's got to be enough people out there, because this home church movement's going on. People are getting fed up, and there's, you know, they're splitter off, and sometimes for right reasons, sometimes for wrong reasons. I mean, but, you know, there's got to be a lot of people who realize now that something's wrong with what we're being taught from the Bible. And
right. Okay, well, I think we did a good job today. I'm gonna end it. I'm